Police in Oakland raided that city's Occupy Wall Street encampment early this morning with 200 officers. Dozens of people were arrested. Even though the Occupy Los Angeles encampment in front of City Hall continues to enjoy good relations with the city police, mass arrests continue to happen in cities like Oakland. Over the weekend, 130 Occupy Chicago protesters were arrested. Members of the National Nurses United protested Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel's offices, chanting, "Arrest the 1%. Famed intellectual Cornel West was arrested along with 30 people for blocking the entrance to a police station in Harlem as part of the Occupy Harlem movement. He and others were protesting the NYPD's so-called stop and frisk policy, which they say racially profiles black and brown men. In more Occupy news, over the weekend, world-famous linguist and political thinker Noam Chomsky addressed the Occupy Boston demonstration in Dewey Square for 40 minutes. He warned that while he was impressed with the movement so far, quote, there is a long way to go.
It's kind of spectacular and unprecedented. There's never been anything like it that I can think of. If the bonds and associations that are being established in these remarkable events can be sustained through a long, hard period ahead, because victories don't come quickly, it could turn out to be a really historic, very significant moment in American history.
Professor Chomsky went on to say that change, quote, requires a lot of work, dedication, and popular support. The Occupy movements have succeeded most strikingly in one aspect, forcing greater and better mainstream media coverage of the vast income inequality in the United States. However, that media coverage has yet to translate into policy changes on Capitol Hill. While President Obama's already weak jobs bill has stalled, he has revived a home mortgage refinancing program. But the program is so convoluted and conditional that it is unclear who, if anyone, will actually benefit from it. Meanwhile, Republicans continue to tout pro-business legislation, and proposals like GOP candidate Herman Cain and his so-called 999 plan, which would lower taxes for the wealthy and increase them for the poor. Meanwhile, in what is sure to be just the beginning of a predictable propaganda wave against Occupy Wall Street, two right-wing authors plan to release a book today in Zuccotti Park in New York titled Red Army, the Radical Network That Must Be Defeated to Save America. The book claims to document, quote, that the Occupy Wall Street movement is well-planned by seasoned extremists and not the spontaneous uprising it claims to be, while alleging that radicals behind the movement maintain White House connections, end of quote. Well, joining me on the phone earlier this morning was Thomas Ferguson, a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Boston and a senior fellow of the Roosevelt Institute, who addressed the Occupy Boston camp yesterday. Welcome to Uprising, Thomas Ferguson.
Hi there.
Well, let me first start by asking you what your general impressions of this movement has been. You're based in Boston, where there's an Occupy Boston encampment at Dewey Park, and that particular group of protesters was addressed over the weekend by Professor Noam Chomsky. You were there yesterday talking about money and politics. What is your impression of this burgeoning progressive movement?
Well, look, I have to say, I deny that I am old enough to have seen the Great Pyramid go up. But, you know, I haven't seen much like this in American politics in a long time. And frankly, it makes me quite happy. I particularly appreciate it. I've been walked around down there two or three times before I talked. And frankly, I love the signs. So the signs are maybe the best tutorial on politics and money, which is sort of what I study, that anybody ever did. I mean, one of them, my favorite, was the one that said, hey, congressmen and women should be like NASCAR drivers, have to wear, show us who their sponsors are. There was another one that said, hey, capitalism is socialism for the 1%. And there were a string of, you know, let's overturn Citizens United. That's the Supreme Court decision that essentially facilitated completely secret corporate donations in unlimited amounts. And look, you know, anybody who follows American politics should. I understand that most people don't, neither reporters nor political scientists, sort of understand the sort of completely dominating role money plays in the U.S. political system. It's a money-driven political system. These folks have it. And in that respect, it's very clarifying. It's a huge tonic for the body politic. You can see all the propaganda about how the government is the problem. These folks they effectively identify the problem, which is in effect that 99% versus 1% in which the political system responds to the 1%. That's it. That's the real story. You fix that, and you can fix America. You don't fix that, and you don't. And I think this is. I am encouraged by the various polls out. I mean, the Gallup poll had put a piece out that said something like most Americans don't have any view of the Occupy Wall Street movement. You know, that's technically true, but they missed the story, which was if you knew about it, you usually liked it. I don't doubt that, you know, the poll is several weeks old, actually. That's going to change. You can see how this is shaking the political establishment. Frankly, this political establishment needs a deep shaking. If it doesn't get it, we're going to sit here at high unemployment, huge budget cuts for years.
Now, I'm wondering how you think protesters who are expanding this movement across the country are going to be able to scare Congress into addressing income inequality when members of Congress usually know that the more money that they can get from corporate coffers in their next re-election bid, the better their chances of winning. I mean, there's a direct correlation
question all the time. Mm-hmm. I have to say, there is actually some evidence I'd be the last person on earth to deny the importance of money in politics, but it also relies on a kind of ignorance. That is to say, there's now some good research that shows what you could sort of figure and what I've experienced myself when I was lobbying on financial reform, which is the threat of exposure makes congressmen and women behave a great deal better. You can see them, if they actually think that folks begin to pay attention to some particularly egregious thing, they will try to jump out of the way. In that respect, the publicity and attention make a difference. I've seen some cases where Barney Frank changed overnight when he was writing his committee was writing the derivative section of the financial reform bill, the Dodd-Frank thing. There's no doubt at all what that was. It was a set of exposure in both the blogosphere and which crossed over into the newspapers. This is a pretty general phenomenon. So let's see what happens. It's clear to me already that if you study both the White House and the Congress closely, as well as the Republicans, they're all sort of they're sitting around taking account of this. Now, they will try both to manipulate it and to marginalize it, but it's clearly a threat. And I think it's still growing because the problems are just getting worse, and there is no solution to the unemployment. Nobody's doing anything to put people back to work in any serious way. I mean, the Obama proposals, better than what he's done before, they're basically a drop in the bucket. You have enormous numbers of unemployed, and you need the equivalent of a New Deal. He's not offering anything like that.
Well, I'm wondering what you make of the fact that Republican candidates for president who are gearing up their campaigns now seem to be not very affected by this Occupy movements in their tax plans. At least you see Republican candidate Herman Cain with his 999 tax plan.
Yep.
Rick Perry has now offered something quite, I don't know, I guess bizarre is a good way to describe it, a 20% voluntary flat tax. And Republicans seem to think that all they have to do is simplify the tax plan, but what does that really mean?
Look, Republican electorates in primaries are a very special animal. first thing to be said is they're very strange in terms, they're not going to be huge in terms of the percentage of all voters, and the percentage of folks who are in them who are, well, rather far out of the mainstream, to judge even from the polls that show that, you know, Americans, if they know about Occupy Wall Street, generally like it, they're going to have a fair amount of impact. The other side of this is, look, if you're talking Republican primaries, and this is probably more important than even the stuff about the electorate that I've just mentioned and a lot of people concentrate on, look, the Republican Party is utterly, totally, and completely dominated by large contributors. There's no such, I mean, just nothing else really matters. You could see Michelle Bachmann as her own manager. Ed Rollins pointed out she had a small contributor strategy. She's going nowhere. Asking why are Republican presidential candidates doing what they are doing, this is to highlight the problem is in the American system. It's that money is talking and the population is. Let's see what happens as these folks develop. I mean, I frankly think this is going to be fun. I want to see this. And you can also see, if you look behind, if you just pay just off stage, there's an awful lot of Republican leaders who are petrified that Perry or somebody is going to talk themselves into a corner the way the Sharon Angleton or did out in Nevada, where she blew a race that seemed impossible to lose, or Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, mm-hmm. where she went down in what seemed to be a made-to-order victory just by talking herself into a corner. I mean, I don't expect a Republican nominee for president to be carrying on about witches. In Delaware, that's what happened. But hey, in a Republican primary, anything can happen.
Finally, my guest is Tom Ferguson. He is a professor of political science at University of Massachusetts Boston and a senior fellow of the Roosevelt Institute. He addressed the Occupy Boston camp yesterday, and we've been talking about the intersection of money and politics and how Occupy Wall Street has been calling attention to that.